Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 28th of December. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
I'm Charles Archer.
Everyone having a good Christmas so far, plenty of food and drink.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
New game
good
starts.
Tidings we bring to you and your
enough
kin.
Already, enough already.
It's kin, not king.
I said kin.
Oh, you did. Kin. That's all right. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone
it's
good?
Kin. It means your family, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah. English.
And anybody who doesn't know that song says king.
Yeah, they do. I thought you did. I was about to lecture you at length.
Oh,
but anyway.
Right, well, what we're doing, we're going to have a look at 2026, and we're going to bring you 12 stocks on our radar for 2026, plus six moonshots. And I'm going to look to you, Charles. I'm going to get you on first. Give us your first two, please.
First two? I'm going to go with Amarok and AsiaNet, the two A's. Let's do those two first. Amarok, I've covered extensively over the past few years, but I think basically, you know, keeping it brief, 2025 was optimization year. 2026, we're going into serious production. You get a significant number of ounces of gold out of the ground. There's also potential US or Danish government support coming our way for the critical minerals portfolio. You have expertise out there that can't be replicated anywhere else. And I think we're going to go for an absolute winner. I think the recent assay results from Nanoq, you know, it points towards a very early stage, but points towards a potential tier one project out there as well. It's going to win. The second one is going to be AsiaMet. And this is very simple. Their flagship asset, BKM, it's been agreed to be sold off. And also, I suspect Beton will also be agreed to be sold off. And shareholders would probably receive somewhere around 3p a share after everything's taken into account. The share price right now, I think, is around 1.5p. So it's just arbitrage, basically. If you've seen those, you know, the assets will get sold and the money will come back as a special dividend at some point in 2026, probably during the first half of 2026. Then you're going to get 100% return on your investment at this point. Obviously, all those deals have to go through and actually get finalized and rationalized. But I think it's just a very simple arbitration against the share price where it is and the share price that you'll get back. Simple.
Very good. Okay, my first two are GMET, so Guardian Metal Resources. I think the story says itself. I'll say a few words. Oliver, freezing, tungsten, silver, government grants, etc., etc. I don't think you really need to say much more. They're aggressively pursuing government grants now for Tempah Ute, for processing of stockpiles and tailings prior to full mine build-out. I believe they're going to head towards a PFS on Pilot Mountain. That's going to increase tungsten, silver, the garnets as well. And the big catalyst and why we've chosen this one again is because it's going to go on to the New York Stock Exchange as an ADR. And that effectively, I think, is going to send it, you know, parabolic, is my view. It is a critical metal in the US. You know, potentially with more than one grant that we know they've already got a grant, but more than one grant, the shareholders that's got involved want to be kept the same percentage, if you like, when they go onto the New York Stock Exchange that was announced late in December. And I fully expect Oliver to guide this probably to $1 billion company, to be honest, currently worth about 250,000 or $250 million, I think. And yeah, I think it's going to do incredibly well. The second one I'm going to choose is Delta Gold Technologies. New IPO came to the market in December, currently trading at about 19p and £11 million. Michael Jones is the CEO. He's actually involved in Guardian Metal as well. And he's done this before, but this is all about qubits, nanostate gold in terms of stabilizing the qubit. It's very tightly held. A huge proportion of it is in AIS. The major shareholder's locked in because he's over 10% on Aquis. The BOD is also locked in for 12 months. So I think there's about 80% of the stock that's actually locked in and isn't going to be selling. And if these guys find anything, effectively, Oxford Dynamics, I think it was sold for $1 billion early in 2025 for just a measuring switch on qubit. The Toronto University, the main guy there is a guy called Harry, the professor, and he is actually the world expert in quantum computing. So I think the potential for this to be worth 50 to 100 million with nothing really proven up, even though they're going to probably have patents next year, in my view, is very, very likely. And I think it's going to do extremely well, and it's going to attract some big players over the next 6 months.
Okay, good.
Phil?
Yeah, my first two are, I'm going to start with Energy Pathways, EPP, company you've probably heard mentioned a few times on the podcast before. I think that they could become one of the UK's most important pieces of future energy infrastructure. Obviously, we talked about the Marram Energy Storage Hub, or MESH, located off the Cumbria coast in the East Irish Sea. Big changes in 2025. Obviously, MESH changed materially when the Secretary of State for Energy Security and DESNZ, formally designated a development of national significance, pushing it into the fast-track planning regime under the Planning Act 2008. And obviously, most recently, Energy Pathways also submitted an expanded gas storage license application covering both the natural gas and hydrogen storage, targeting an area capable of hosting up to 60 salt caverns, almost four times larger than originally planned. And if that is approved, obviously, that would put MESH on a scale comparable to Centrica's Rough gas storage facility, but with a lower cost development profile. What makes it MESH different is its whole system design. It combines this long duration energy storage using compressed air, hydrogen, thermal energy, and natural gas, capturing billions of pounds of curtailed offshore wind power that the UK currently wastes, and then releasing that energy back to the grid during periods of low renewable generation. Crucially, obviously, Energy Pathways are not working alone. MESH is being advanced with these tier one industrial partners, including Siemens Energy on the hydrogen to power, KBR and Hazer on the methane pyrolysis, and engineering partners such as Wood and Costain. And that partner list materially de-risked technical credibility for a company of this size. Looking into 2026, the key catalysts are pretty clear. You've got progress on license approvals for the gas and hydrogen storage, advancement towards a development consent order, further commercial and funding alignment with industry partners, and increased visibility on financing pathways for construction. So I think it offers a pretty good leverage to UK energy transition policy and grid stability, and also hydrogen and long duration storage. So yeah, that's my first one. I think that was a bit of a shock to you probably, Kev, because you probably thought I was not going to not include that. But yeah. So the next one is Sovereign Metals. We've talked about that one. That was a pick that I had last year, which is still in there. They have just delivered one of the most significant strategic developments in its corporate history by securing a collaboration agreement with the International Finance Corporation, the private sector arm of the World Bank, to advance the flagship Kasia-Rutile graphite project in Malawi. And the partnership is a game changer because the IFC isn't just a technical advisor, it's a potential project financier with rights to act as a lender, mandated co-lead arranger, and investor in future financing for Kasia, subject to Rio Tinto's rights, setting up a credible pathway to institutional project funding that many junior resource developers never achieve. So I guess there's three implications there from an investor perspective. The enhanced project bankability now with IFC's environmental and social performance standards into the definitive feasibility study, and environmental and social impact assessment de-risk the project on ESG grounds that global lenders and off-takers increasingly mandate. Second is the involvement of multilateral development institution material, elevating Kaseya's profile beyond a typical junior exploration. And then third is that the IFC's long runway of financing experience with major mining projects means Sovereign could secure competitive financing terms when it's time to fund construction. I think, Charles, you said, didn't you, last year that, or certainly the back end of last year, that this was a game-changing RNS on the World Bank news.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. It is total political de-risking. But then beyond that, it's the World Bank, the IFC, only collaborates with genuine tier one projects that are going to go into production. It's as simple as that. And if you look at the market capitalization of Sovereign versus what its likely MRE upgrade is going to come out with, it's just a slam dunk. It's as simple as that, really.
Yeah,
And
cool.
so my next two picks for 2026 are going to be Bazant and Jubilee. So we'll start with Bazant. I've done just a significant amount of work really drilling into the technical detail. And every time I come back with the same thing, there is execution risk and deposit risk, as there always is with any asset. It's in Namibia, open copper mine, so the political risk is fairly low. So, things can go wrong. And obviously, it's had a good run this year already, even though it's come back down a bit. But if all goes to plan, you'll be generating tens of millions of dollars of free cash flow from this asset. And the market cap is what, 13 million pounds? Obviously, the other thing is copper is at record highs and gold as well. Those are going to, I think, potentially keep rising. But even if they don't, then the base case of this, this asset, you could see them both fall dramatically and it would still be profitable. And I think basically it's the same story as you do with a lot of these small cap stocks, is that until that first amount of copper is sold, potentially later in 2026, some point in H2 or Q4 2026, people won't believe it. But the second that does get sold, then it'll re-rate very quickly. And the potential to make a lot of profit out of this is very strong, if you're prepared to hold it. Simple as that. And then Jubilee Metals, Jubilee, I'm going to keep hold of. After the results came out, it's dropped down to 2.9p a share. So I think it's around $120 million market capitalization. The payments that they're due, $90 million, or just, or very close to that, subject dependent. That means that they've got $90 million of just pure cash, just cash coming into the company, not shares, not that equity, cash coming into the company. And then 30 million, that means that your enterprise value of all of the assets in Zambia is $30 million. And you guys have been out there. That's not worth just $30 million, even accounting for political risk or anything else. The fact that we're going into a mining super cycle and Leon has $90 million to go out spending, we know what you can buy with $90 million out in Africa, the kind of assets that are available and the things that can be done. And that we could use Bazant as a good example. CapEx costs, yes, there's a lot of money has gone into that mine to make sure it works. So the CapEx cost there was like $13 million. So if he does something, I'm not saying Bazant or anything like that, but if he does go down that route, there's a hell of a lot of money to be made from that initial investment. So we shall see.
Yeah, I mean the Rowan and
Sable.
Sable alone, even probably written on the books, is worth it more than $30 million.
Oh, so I think it's, yeah, significantly more. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you're basically getting the operations for free if you like. Okay, my next two, again we go back to Zambia and in this case now Morocco, is Extract Resources. They've still got money coming in from the gold sale, which effectively is near enough the market cap. You've got Silver King will be in production in 2026, producing a small amount, but it's going to produce plenty of revenue. You know, the clue is in the name, Silver King. There is quite an add-on of silver in terms of the copper. We've got silver now at $66 an ounce. That's going to add some serious amount. We've got antimony. Production coming in. It's been piled up already from my conversations with Colin. And then subsequently, once the plant arrives, they're going to be sticking it through it and getting production. So that antimony is going to be coming out, and they're going to have revenue from that in 2026. And hence the reason why they raise the money to do those things as quickly as possible. Now, here's the question, and this is why I picked it. Bushranger, Australian asset. 1.3 million tons of contained copper with some gold credits. How much is that worth at 11,000 copper? How much is it worth at 12,000 copper? How much is it worth at 13,000 copper? How much is it worth at 14,000 copper? If you believe in the story we've been talking about for the last 2 years, that there's a copper deficit coming, 2026 is the year it's coming, especially with all the mines having problems around the world, how much is Bushranger worth? Because right now, on the books, with all those other things in extract, it's worth zero.
Yeah, well, I think we know. You can correct me if I'm wrong because I haven't looked at Bushranger in a long time. But when that study came out, and obviously it wasn't well received at the time because copper was so low, I think it needed $10,000 copper to be viable, right?
That's right.
So if you get $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 copper, which is completely possible, looking at the environment that we have, you look at the tier one copper mines that have had problems over this year. Four of them have either reduced output or gone out of commission. Copper price is soaring. Electrification AI data centers going crazy. Yeah, it'll have value. And the other thing is the location of that asset is very attractive if you were ever to build it out.
Yeah, it's not in Zambia.
This is
It's not.
important.
It's
It's not
not.
even just that, where is it in Australia, Kev? Do you know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, and if you remember, Extract, on the basis that this asset alone, never mind Silver King and the antinomy in Morocco, Extract was 7 or 8p and a very significant market cap. It's
And
currently got a 7 million pound market cap, which is about the money that they're going to receive from the gold in
the Manica sale, yeah, it's
the
pretty much
Manica. So, you know, my mind is blown by the value that is available with Extract. If you believe the story that the copper's going up in price, silver's already going mental, antinomy, even if it falls a bit in value, is still going to be mega profitable. And Bushranger is the thing that could easily be sold for $100 million, easily. If copper goes to $12,000, $13,000, then how can 7 million market cap not be a good place to be invested? Doesn't make any sense. Okay, so that was my third one. My fourth one is we're getting into the biotech now, into Sylvanus. Anthony's a great guy there in Sylvanus. We've got SVNS 001. UK trials ongoing for the using the ketamine and the alcohol addiction. As Charles wrote the article, I believe this is NASDAQ bound. It's 90 or 17 million market cap at the minute, 0.25 pence. And effectively, it's got many, many things. SVN02, phase 2B trials, moderate to severe alcohol disorder again. They're doing a bridge with J&J, Johnson & Johnson. It's 29 million people in the US who are suffering from this. And yeah, everything really changed in this stock mid-2025 when they finalized the acquisition of Awaken. Awaken comes with Professor Nutt, and Professor Nutt, in a nutshell, is basically now producing more and more drugs all the time. You've got SVN14, which is PTSD, and the most recent one, SVN015, which is meth and cocaine use disorders, and that's now got US government assistance to take it through to the second stage of things. So how it's only worth 17 million when its compatriots on the NASDAQ are literally worth hundreds of millions, I don't know. But I think when the first thing happens, which I believe will be SVN001, because it's the furthest one along with the trials in the National Health Service. When they monetize one thing, then I think you're going to be in a situation where, you know, it's game on. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I've done again pretty extensive research into it. I think the key point to note is that they're in phase three trials for their flagship, right? And
Yeah.
phase two, off the top of my head, I think it was something like what, 86% success
Yeah, it
versus
was
placebo.
86, yeah.
Yeah, and then the current standard of care was something in the 20s. So even if phase three is not as absurdly positive compared to phase two, because it tends to be the case that phase three is just not quite as good, it'd still be far, far better than the current standard of care. It's as
Don't
simple as
think there
that.
really is proper care for it, is there? That's the
No,
issue.
there's not. Well, there is nothing. I mean, the reality is that particularly with alcoholics, it's the fundamental brain chemistry. It just doesn't change. If you go and just have talking therapy, it doesn't work. It's as
Yeah,
simple as that. And if you have an alcoholic in your family and you know an actual alcoholic, there is no help that can actually help. And now this is the other thing why I like this stock, because the ability to invest in something that can actually make a material change to the lives of people who are addicted or depressed or PTSD, that's, it's also a form of, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's philanthropy to a point,
Through
but
investing, yeah.
If you think about it from the point of view of you're getting paid to help people not drink, that's quite a wonderful situation.
Yeah, exactly. I
And
think
then you
Professor David Nutt,
just have to say, make sure you go to the pub, to bring up the, you got to keep the pubs open as well.
That's right. Go to the
Effect.
pub and talk about
Your
Solvana.
next stock is your next stock is Revolution or Wetherspoons, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, but no, I mean Professor David Nutt, the Sylvanus's chief scientific officer. When you look at, I think his connections he has, I think he's the man. I mean, obviously Anthony's really well connected, but when you see the work he's done with they were accepted. It was it the NIDA or NIDA funded addiction treatment discovery program for methamphetamine and cocaine, which was released back at the sort of back end of or beginning of December actually. That was a real game changer. One that just demonstrated the connections that David Nutt has in the US, with the National Institute of Drug Abuse and the National Institute of Health as well, the NIH. I think that demonstrates his connections, and I think that will really help the company going forward. Yep. So my last two. First one is a newcomer, is Ajax Resources. We spoke to Ippolito recently. They have quickly transitioned from a SPAC shell when they first listed to a natural resource company executing a clear asset-led strategy, which is exactly what makes it an interesting speculative investment case. The flagship project is obviously, we've talked about this, is the Eureka copper gold asset in northwest Argentina. It doesn't actually have any proper JORC on it, but it's obviously there's a historical estimate, and I've got the numbers. I mean, there's a really nice graphic that someone did with Ajax Resources potential assets in the ground. And so Eureka's got 620,000 tons of copper, 52,000 ounces of gold. That's a historical estimate. They've got the Paguanta asset, which has got 6.8 million ounces of silver, 265 million pounds of zinc, and 74 million pounds of lead. The Leon project with 40,920 tons of copper and 3.82 million ounces of silver, and then the latest acquisition, which has been backed by Appian, the big fund in the US, with Pereira Velho, which has got 110,000 ounces of gold in it. So I think it's Edison have just released an analysis note on there that's showing once that the JORC compliant resource is declared, which is expected in the sort of first half of 2026, it could dramatically crystallize value with a mean valuation in the region of somewhere like 25 pence per share based on the in situ copper and gold, plus obviously existing cash material above the current levels. The company has a very tight cost structure with minimal overheads, maintaining a net cash position through its recent fundraising, which we saw at the back end of November, meaning it's positioned to fund its drilling programs without excessive dilution. And I think it just from an investment perspective, it combines early stage discovery potential, contingent value from multiple assets, and a near-term catalyst around the maiden resource. So definitely one that, as I say, that I think is on our radar for 2026. And I think looking at those potentially, if they can demonstrate that those assets are as good as we think they are, then I think it'll have a very good run.
Yeah, I was speaking with Ippolito today for about 15, 20 minutes. Like he's buzzing. He's buzzing. He's like, I compare him to Oliver Friesen and GMET. He's if he's got the right assets, got the right mindset, and I think he's going to be making it work. You know, you look at the young CEOs that we talked about in Amaroq, GMET, and now Ajax. Those guys know what they're doing, and yeah, I can. That's a good pick. I
Good,
wanted to pick it myself.
good to have a newcomer in there. And then my final one is Encantera. Obviously, we've talked about them in the past, but basically market ready investment. They've spent much of 2025 progressing a genuine commercial strategy around the scientifically developed skin and cell skincare range, which we've all had care packs from. I'll ask your opinions on the product in a minute. Moving beyond concept into this D2C revenue model. Obviously, earlier in the year, they announced that they weren't going to continue with the Marinade, so they were going with the direct consumer via the website, which is now live, and also continuing to position itself as a clinical stage dermatology oncology technology company as well, rather than just a traditional cosmetic play. In 2025, the company announced that obviously that it went live on the dedicated commercial website, making the thing. There's five different products: the face, body, hand, serum, and eye cream products available globally, backed by influencer and social media campaigns across the usual, social media, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Commercial update earlier in the year showed that Encantera had 100 100,000 units of the finished skin cell inventory ready for sale, and had signed this global direct consumer marketing agency agreement that operates on a success-based royalty model. So, half-year results for 6 months to September 30th of September confirmed the global DTC launch and showed early traction, steady increases in website hits, social media engagement, and conversions, with positive consumer feedback, particularly around the B3 face product already emerging as a top seller. So, good news on the on that sort of rollout. 2026's story is really just about the scaling and validation, you know, increasing the DTC sales and brand penetration, engaging with more of these additional market partners and influencers, and which could maybe open up, you know, retail and wholesale channels. I'd like to see this in the shelves at some of the, you know, some of the, you know,
That's what
Boots
they
or
need. They need it on the shelves at
absolutely.
Boots and in
Yeah,
Tesco, and you know,
100%.
thing
Because
is
the
that I
product packaging, I think we had this discussion, Charles, because I think you must receive like a different batch, because
I
my
just I got a sample batch rather than what it actually
yeah,
was,
because
you know.
I've got the gold bottles, which are really,
Which
really
I've seen
premium.
now, and they look
You sent
premium.
me one, my mate. Have you seen?
We had this really straight the conversation we had. I was like, this doesn't look premium at all. What is this crap? And then you were like, what does it look like? I was like, this is plain white. And then no, it's fine. It actually looks great. And you know, the but what they need, I mean, this is the thing, right? You can do the influencer thing. They've got a patented product that people want to try, right? It looks premium, it looks the part. They just need to get it on the shelves. They need to get it on the shelves anywhere, and then it will take off.
Roll it out.
Simple as that, really.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah,
Well,
no,
that's
my wife has been using it. I bought it as a gift for my mother as well for Christmas. Yeah, my wife really rates it. She thinks it's really good. It's not cheap, but there was a 50% sale there. There is 25% before Christmas or after Christmas as well, I think. I think it's going to boom. I think I don't want to stick my neck on the line, but I think you've got the chance of picking the one that does a thousand percent plus, to be honest, because it's such a low market cap now. If it actually gets going, and don't forget the full story here, because the full story here is that Incantera is a pharma play that happens to be selling this stuff. That eventually, this delivery system is probably going to help with skin cancer. That's the reality of this play longer term, and why Incantera could become worth £1 billion easily if this delivery system works and it can solve that problem. Because the pharmaceutical companies are going to desperately want this delivery system, and they're going to pay for it. In the meantime, they need the cash flow, and they'll get the cash flow from this to further their other things. And I think probably in the new year they're going to have some sort of deal that someone else is going to be selling it as well as themselves direct. That's my view.
Okay, so Charles, give us your moonshot one and two.
Yeah, from the as they are moonshots, we will be brief with them because I think we've been talking for a long time already. So I've got two. The first is AFC Energy. This is the hydrogen economy moonshot. I think it's gone up since I wrote an article, did an interview, but it was 9p a share a couple of weeks ago. I think this could be a 10x within the next couple of years, potentially sooner if the technology delivers, right? So the core thesis is there's problems plaguing the hydrogen adoption policy, right? There's cost, transport, and production efficiency. AFC isn't going to do expensive electrolysis. It's not building out new infrastructure. They're using ammonia as a hydrogen cracker, carrier. Ammonia is a very, very common chemical. You crack it on site, deliver the hydrogen at £10 per kilogram, which is a fraction of typical costs. So the key tech is the HY5 cracker. It produces 500 kilograms of hydrogen daily at much lower cost compared to electrolysis. Its next gen fuel cells are 85% cost reduction achieved, and they're targeting diesel parity by 2026. So effectively, it will cost the same to use hydrogen or diesel. Hydrogen's quieter, it's cleaner, there's a lot of advantages to it. And it works without hydrogen pipelines, so you're not waiting for a lot of that infrastructure to be built. They've got an S&P 500 partner expecting material revenues from 2027. They're working with Volex, which the partnership from scaling, joint ventures with Speedy Hire in the construction market, and ICL for hydrogen production, with Tango Distribution. It's fantastic. There is risk, obviously, because hydrogen stocks are risky, but it's asymmetrical. They've got 25 million in cash, and if they deliver, it will do incredibly, incredibly well. My next moonshot is going to be Defence Holdings. This is the UK's sovereign AI defence play. Obviously, shot up earlier this year, it's come back down a bit, but you're still way up, you know, 3-4x if you got in when I first identified it. The core thesis here is that we're building sovereign AI products on trusted hyperscale platforms, so Google, Oracle, Nvidia, for example, for UK and NATO defense applications. Its fast execution, allied alignment, and partnerships with tech leaders converting strategy into deploy capability. That all sounds very buzzwordy, I'm aware. But the key thing for me is that it's trailblazer valuation, right? Most classified work is hidden in private companies. Defence holdings offers you exposure to NATO and UK capabilities through sovereign AI. They're going to deploy very shortly. And they've been pulled into NATO's digital transformation core. So, you've got strategic partnerships with Google Cloud, with Oracle, with NVIDIA. Their first Project Ixion, uses AI/ML to detect and assess open source content for faster decision making and information warfare. Second project, edge analysis and identification. These are things, and these projects are being developed by Andy McCartney, who is you was at one point very senior in Microsoft. This, if they deliver on it, is going to be a 10x next year. But again, it's a moonshot. There are risks. Things can go wrong. But I think it's just exceptional. Kev, over to you.
Okay, our next two moon plays, or my next two moon plays, are first African Pioneer, which is on Gombo. Mining license currently got a mining license in Namibia. It's actually a bigger resource than Hope and Garup currently, which is quite bizarre. It's got a great license in Zambia, had a JV with First Quantum, great licenses in Botswana. I think things are going to move next year. And the reason why I'm picking it is because its market cap is £2 million and it has a huge resource and a mining license in Namibia. So that would be my first one. The second one is Active Energy. Paul Elliott, we interviewed him a couple of times there. The big play here is the data centers for AI in Dubai. And the real play, which I think everybody's missed, is that they've got a deal with Abu Dhabi National Energy at ultra low cost energy. And the reason why it's going to work and work so efficiently is because they have that deal for the ultra low cost energy. They've already got 8 megawatts being built, 60% of it sold. They're going for 300 megawatts. There's going to be 33 megawatts on the one site, and then another 60 megawatts on another site, which supposedly early 2026 is going to be sorted out. They've also got massive losses to write off from their previous coal switch technology, which they had in the past. But now they've switched focus to the data centers producing the energy for them. And the reason why I've chosen it is because it's got a £3 million market capitalization. And the first 8 megawatts is going to be worth more than that to them in profit.
Okay, very good. Yeah, my two moonshots. I'll start with my first one is Zenith Energy. We've talked about them in the past. The current share price is around 3.25 pence, circa about 15 million market cap from memory. Let me just double check that one. Oh, 21 million pound market cap. It's been much, much higher in the year, as you probably saw, certainly in 2025. It's really a litigation-driven investment, and this is really why it's a moonshot. I'm sure you both agree with me. It could go either to, not to zero, but it could certainly drop from these levels. But if it does come in, it could be transformational in terms of not just the blue sky technology within it, but due to the obviously the legal monetization and the so basically the company has spent the last few years repositioning away from the legacy energy assets towards a strategy centered on this international arbitration claims, and they've got one, I think, well, they've got three of them ongoing. But the biggest one is against the Republic of Tunisia, where Zenith is seeking compensation for alleged unlawful termination of oil and gas concessions. And obviously, they're being pursued under the international investment treaties with claim damages running into, I think it's like hundreds of millions of dollars, far in excess of Zenith's current market cap, around that 20 million. So if one of these comes in, we're talking to, like 10x on returns potentially. Alongside that litigation strategy as well, Zenith has built exposure to uranium. You probably saw the RNS that came out towards the back end of last year. And yeah, they've got some pretty good assets in Italy there, which I believe Ippolito were originally held within Ajax and were moved into Zenith again earlier in the year. So it's not a pure play uranium mine, and obviously it's positioned itself as a commodity optionality that complements that litigation upside. And if uranium prices remain elevated or continue to rise, as some people predict into 2026, then it could be a good play on that as well. So that's my first one. Any comments on Zenith before I move on?
Yeah,
Yeah, I think it's a good one.
I was just going to say that they're if you look into the law company representing their claims, they generally back winners. Just only comment.
Okay. Second moonshot, IMM, Immu Pharma, pharmaceutical play. No, it's all in the name. They groundbreaking news in 2025 with the filing of that new patent for P140, positioning it as the world's first immunormalizer and transforming it from a single asset clinical story into a precision medicine platform. The patent, which offers the potential for 20 years of commercial exclusivity, covers both the novel diagnostic test and targeted treatment approach, identifying a newly defined subgroup of autoimmune patients, type M immune disorder, who are shown to be super responders to P140. So I guess that the patent initially re-rated the asset, didn't it, in the back of sort of Q3 of 2025, and it did drop back a bit, and that's one of the reasons why I've gone for it, because I feel that it's almost like the market has forgotten all this. And I think looking to 2026, I think that the value drivers are clear, you know, advancing that P140 using the precision framework and accelerating. The bit that I'm interested in is any partnering discussions, because obviously Tim's been on in the past. He's talked about the fact that they've had some discussions with partners there, which you know, they'd already flagged and progressing a clinically de-risked development pathway. So yeah, I'm going for that one as my moonshot. I think it could go very high if they, you know, partnering discussions come to fruition.
Very good.
Yep, good, good.
So we didn't think we'd picked any bad ones last year. I wonder whether we've picked any bad ones this year.
I don't know. I don't know. I think though, I think if you take all of those stocks, right? And that the moonshots, they're higher risk but high reward. The 12 core ones that we picked, there are some that are high risk, high reward within those as well. But I would say if you just spread all of your capital across all of our picks, will you be up by the end of next year?
We'll
Let's
find
hope
out,
so.
and I would say
We're finding out.
almost,
Almost.
It's recorded now.
I would say almost certainly, unless we have some sort of like economic
AI bubble collapses.
Armageddon. Well, even if the AI bubble collapses, I think what we've got here is stuff that is going to do well regardless. The AI is only one contributory part of the resource sectors that we're in. It's not the main thing. You know, the overall reality is that there's going to be a shortfall in copper this year because, you know, the guy in India needs a fridge, and a car is going to be built. And you know, someone was telling me as well the other day, they really think platinum's got a good chance of going on a great run.
Because the ice, the electric cars are slowing down.
Yeah, so you're going to see
So they're
more
going to have to.
catalytic converters. So,
But on top of that, gold has moved, silver has moved, platinum's only up 80%. Do you know? So I say only. Platinum could be an incredible good just commodity play for next year.
yeah. And one of the reasons why I really liked Ajax that you picked, Phil, was because of the 10 million ounces and potentially significantly more than that of silver. I think, you know, that alone, you know, if you gave that $1 an ounce valuation, that gives it a valuation of 10 million quid, and its current valuation is five, you know. So
You've got to remember that 70 to 80% of all silver production is a byproduct, isn't it, of mining from other metals that we've seen, you know, zincs and all the different ones. So ultimately, if you can actually put a proper pure play silver mine into production, you're laughing.
And that's why I also chose Extract Silver King. It's got very high silver contributions going in there as well in Extract. So yeah, I mean, let's finish with where do you think copper, gold, silver will be this time next year?
This time next
Predictions.
year, I'm going
Okay.
to say a lot higher.
Yeah, that's not an
The problem is, I'll tell you what the problem is that in every bull market, whether it's precious or base metals, there can be weeks or even month-long stretches where they drop 40, 50%. And you've seen this in every single bull market, every single one. So I don't want to say at the end of 2026, they'll be much higher because that could be the point of the bull market where there's the dip. But I think the key thing to remember is if it is a secular bull market, if there is that massive dip, like this is not advice, but try not to sell because it will. It's the sort of thing that, you know, history shows does happen and then it bounces back up.
My question to you, and then we talked about this before, Kev, is Is it that gold is actually changing, or is it that the US dollar is changing? And you've addressed this. I pulled up this really good graphic that someone put onto X. It was actually on TikTok, but it made it onto X, and it was showing the different values. So it said like December 2015, 2025, $4,300 gold. December 2020, 1,853. December 15, 2015, 1,070. December 15th, 2010, 1400. December the 15th, 2005, 510, and December the 15th, for $270 gold. So every 5 years, it's gone up pretty, rapidly, apart from in 2010 when it actually dropped back. Presumably, that was that between the crisis, but maybe that was something to do with the crash of 2008, 2009. So it
Yeah.
went from 1400 in 2010 to 1070 in 2015. So is that the dollar strengthening? I just don't know.
Well, I think the key thing to bear in mind, right? I did an article on this, but the really key thing is the difference between investment risk and promise risk, right? And so investment risk is what will the gold be worth a year from now, which is exactly what you guys were asking, right? And this is what everyone gets all very excited. Obviously, if you own gold miners, it's incredibly important. And they go, oh, well, gold will be worth, quote unquote, $3,000 or $5,000 or $4,000 or $2,000 or $6,000. That's secondary. Promise risk is the primary reason to own gold. And that is you own gold. That's the entire relationship. The metal exists. You have it. It's yours. Everything else, you say you own a house, but it requires legal structures, it requires the government to enforce your ownership of the house and the police to, kick out anyone who tries to come in, and the bank to make sure that you own it and it's on a land registry. And this gold is pretty much, and silver and platinum to a lesser extent, the only assets that you actually own without any other contract.
Yeah.
And so in a world where the US keeps printing dollars or we have geopolitical instability, people turn to that.
Do you ever sell silver and gold? As in, these Bitcoin maxis, you say you always hold it because it's a different currency. Do you think, is there ever, I almost feels like I've been stacking silver and gold for the last few years. It almost feels like I don't ever want to sell it, if that makes
Well, I
sense.
don't. I mean, I Bitcoin. I have Bitcoin that I'll never sell. I have gold, some gold and silver I'll never sell. But I think it's the same with the Greatland Resources shares, which I'm toying with at the moment. It's a mental struggle. The reason that you might want to sell them is because you want to enjoy the money and live. And I think it's particularly the case. I mean, I speak to a lot of high net worth investors, as I'm sure you guys do as well. Many of them are in the 60s and 70s, and they're still focused on generating even more money. And that's fine, because they enjoy it. But often it's at the expense of enjoying life. And if you're sitting on like millions and millions of dollars worth of silver or gold or whatever, but you're living a life of a frugal man, like, what's the point? You can't take it with you.
But you wouldn't sell it all, would you? I mean,
No
you'd be
point at all.
converting.
I've bought silver, so eventually I can buy land, but
And
it will be
bury the
sold.
silver on it,
There is
presumably, with a little
no.
X on the back.
Okay, I'm gonna go predictions because none of you are
Well,
going.
I'll give you mine then. So
Okay,
I'm going to
go
go
on.
gold at the end this time next year. I'm going to go 6,000 gold. I'm going to do silver at 180, and I'll go copper at equivalent in tons. I'll go $13,500 per ton.
Charles.
Girls are gold 5,000, silver 80. I think it's had such a spiky run, and I think also around silver there's a hell of a lot of shady paper practices, so we'll keep it depressed for a while longer. And then copper, it's hard to know. Copper, it will depend whether we have a crash and a recession. But I you know, if we can go to like 12,000, 13,000, I'd be very happy with that.
Okay, gold, I have 5,800. I think it will be about $5,800 an ounce. Silver, I think will go up to $200 an ounce, but this time next year, I think it's going to be around the $130, $140 an ounce, so double from where it is now. And copper, I think is going to surprise everybody on the upside. I'm going for $15,000 copper.
Country. Right, gents, it's been lovely to
Good.
chat.
Thanks for appearing.
And yeah, goodbye. Happy New Year.
Thank you for your time this year, Charles. And let's hope 2026 is at least as good as our 85% in 2025.
Okay, so just a quick update. We recorded this podcast on the 18th of December. We thought we were cruising into Christmas, but obviously things changed quite drastically. So a bit of an update on the silver. I think during the podcast we quoted that silver was at 67. Gone bananas since then. It's now 79 on the futures market, or reached 79 on the futures market, and actually over 80. In fact, close to 82.10 in Shanghai. So that's obviously going to make a dramatic difference to some of the stuff we talked about. Also, copper update. Copper has also gone on a run as well. Now copper's nearing just shy of $13,000 a ton. Which obviously makes a big difference to some of the stocks. Again, we didn't think there'd be that much of a change, but GMET's gone on one hell of a run since we recorded this, and we'll be using the 18th to the 12th as our time and the value that we're going to use for next year, because our 85% return for 2025 was also based on that date. And by the time we got to Christmas, it was actually 101%. So things had obviously really gone well in that last week. So GMET's heavily up. Defence holding alert is even further up. But just wanted to give you an update on that so that people can see where we were at when we were recording it. Okay, so you're aware, these were the prices that we used on the 18th of the 12th. So everybody's aware. Extract Resources, 0.55%. Pence. Bazant Resources, 0.075 pence. Guardian Metal Resources, 110 pence. Amaroq Minerals, 98 pence. Energy Pathways, 4.05 pence. Asia Met, 1.573. Jubilee, 2.9 pence. Sylvanus, 0.25. Incantera, 2.5p. And then we had two others. We had Ajax Resources at 5.5p, and we had Sovereign Metals at 29 pence. So they are the 12 stocks. We also had the six moonshots, and these prices are as follows: Active Energy 0.075, AFC Energy at 10.3 pence. Immu Pharma at 5.5 pence, Zenith Energy at 3.385, African Pioneer at 0.74, and Defence Holdings, which I've already mentioned, has gone up significantly since we recorded this at 1.15 pence. Okay, so I hope that makes it all clear how we're going to be judging these stocks, and good luck with everybody's position for 2026.
And yeah, and if you enjoyed the chat and want to stay in the loop, definitely hit the subscribe and tap that bell icon so you never miss an update. Really appreciate you being here, and we'll catch you next time for more news and stories. Thanks for listening, and have a fantastic weekend all.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.